Hello and welcome to Join the Docs. Everyone knows that diet and exercise are the keys to good health. Today, Nigel, Slim and I are going to present a digital diet and suggest caution with surfing, internet surfing that is. Did you know that every day there are over 8.5 billion online searches? That shopping, entertainment and research are the most common reasons, and roughly one-third of such searches are for health-related topics. We're going to discuss how all of this got started, how it can be a power for good or bad, and how to spot one from another. Computers and the internet have revolutionized our lives, and used properly are amazing tools. Improperly, well, they can be fatal. Thanks for being here to Join the Docs, our weekly podcast about the fascinating world of medicine. I'm Professor Jonathan Sakia, a surgeon.
And I'm Dr. Nigel Guest, a family practitioner.
Nigel, when did you get your first computer?
Computer? Oh, yeah, I had access to a 286 in about 1990, but owned one a lot later.
So, given how cluttered your computer desktop is, and I've seen it, I think it's probably the same one. And I know when you got your first email address because it's still at AOL. And you still look a tad mystified whenever someone discusses anything related to the internet.
Yeah, yeah. Listen, me and the interweb are as one.
Well, I still love you. So the word computer was first used in the early 1600s, 1613, in a book called The Young Man's Gleanings by Richard Braithwaite, and it referred to a human who undertook calculations or computations. And that definition remained until the early Industrial Revolution, where it came to mean what we'd now recognize as a calculator, a mechanical calculating machine. Interestingly, in the 60s, NASA used the term computer to refer to the women who did mathematical computations on getting a spaceship to go to the moon.
Well, we had a family business, or my grandfather had a family business, and every year when they did the accounts, they had this ridiculous machine with like a handle you can turn, and you had to set the figures. And it used to do the calculating, but Gordon Bennett, it was horrific.
Well, not Gordon Bennett, but a geezer named Charles Babbage in 1821 probably built the first mechanical calculator, which he called the Difference Engine Number One. We'd recognize it as looking like, I guess, a mechanical abacus. And he worked with a lady who is recognized as being probably the first programmer. Her name was Ada Lovelace.
Oh, that's Linda's mum.
When I saw that name, I thought, geez, when I mentioned that, I know exactly what Nigel's going to say. And anyone listening in who doesn't know who Linda Lovelace is, I am not going to recommend you check it out, but I know you will. So anyway, moving on a fair bit, Babbage had another version of his machine in 1830, which never got built. But had it been at the time, it would have had 25,000 parts, been 8 feet high and weighed 4 tons. And I believe it was on the 200th anniversary of Babbage's death, the Science Museum in London actually constructed this thing.
It sounds a bit like my first mobile phone.
I've seen that as well. My God,
which I'm still using.
And I know you look baffled because you can't find the dial sometimes. So anyway, moving on, there's a name people recognize, Alan Turing. Alan Turing defined many of the principles that are behind computers today. Brilliant, brilliant man. There's a great movie about his life. The computational devices he built actually helped end the Second World War used for decoding. There have been many other developments. The early 1950s were the first computer languages, COBOL and Fortran. And the first modern computer that could actually store information was in the early 40s, 1941. But in 1971, there was the development of the floppy disk.
Oh, you mean proper floppy disk? What were they, like 5 and a bit inches? Genuinely floppy? Oh, there's a joke there somewhere. No, can't see it.
Again, as I'm writing floppy disk, I'm thinking, yeah, I know exactly what Nigel's going to do with that one. So mid-70s, the Altair computer was developed, and then Bill Gates and Paul Allen developed what is, you know, now Microsoft, and they developed the first computational language for that computer, BASIC. The following year, Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak built the Apple One. I actually looked at a picture of it. That is astonishing what that thing looked like. And then, of course, 1989, drum roll, Tim Berners-Lee at CERN developed HTML and the internet was born. Interestingly, Al Gore purportedly claimed that he had invented, the American politician and presidential candidate, said that he had invented the internet. And Dan Quayle, who'd been Bush's vice president, said he was famous for, because he couldn't spell the word potato.
Oh, yeah.
He famously said, if Al Gore invented the internet, I invented spell check. Anyway.
Hey, you mentioned Paul Allen before. Didn't he used to play for Wall? For Tottenham.
For Tottenham. No, different geezer.
He's a well-known intellect.
Different geezer. So, yeah, his cousin Clive Allen scored a ton of goals for Tottenham. Nice blokes.
Anyway, you were talking about the Tim Berners-Lee and everything like that, and the end of the internet. And I know that, the interweb, that is my go-to place.
I love how you conflate internet and World Wide Web and create interweb. It cracks me up. Another sort of time point, 1996 was the first time a movie was digitized and released on a DVD. Many people today won't even know what a DVD is, and that was the movie Twister.
Oh, yeah, I know. Bill Paxton, yeah? Or are you talking about that game with the coloured dots on that you used to play with your first girlfriend?
I don't know what games you played with your girlfriends, but yeah. The clue would be that when I said movie,
oh, yeah,
I was referring to the movie.
Well, you have to movie to get yourself to get the hands on the dots.
Yes, you do. So the whole purpose of this conversation today was about search engines. The first search engine was called Archie, and it was developed at McGill University in Canada. Then in 1990, Yahoo came along. And I just remember their advertisements. And a few years later, there was AltaVista, Lycos, Excite, InfoSeek. Many of them have kind of disappeared into
the
mist.
What happened to Ask Jeeves?
Ask Jeeves, good Lord, yes.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know if that's still around. No. But 1998, along comes Google, game over, right? And as search engines grew, people were looking, use it as a way of searching for stuff to buy. I don't know if people listening in remember their first use, but I remember my first use of a computer, and I thought, well, this is never going to go anywhere. But it was quite astonishing. Looking for stuff to buy, doing research, including health, and stuff to, entertain, shall we say.
Call it what it is, pornography. Listener, we'll be discussing the effects of online porn on behaviours in a future episode. Lucky you. But an interesting fact. You remember when video recorders first came out, and it must have been early 80s, there were two systems, weren't there? There was Betamax, which was produced by Sony, I think, and then there was VHS. And ultimately, there was a big battle, and they ultimately, VHS, as we know, won that battle. And the reason is because they wouldn't allow, this is Sony, wouldn't allow pornography to be put on Betamax. Whereas,
Hang on a second. How would that be policed? I mean, if people are at home having a bit of fun, was there a knock at the door? Excuse me, what are you up to using our Betamax recorder?
I don't think it's actually that sort. I think it's produced by companies. And anyway, if they policed it, they'd ask people to come quietly, wouldn't they?
So it's not surprising that roughly a quarter of people say that the first thing they do when they suspect, you know, when they develop new symptoms or they think they've got something going on or they're given a new drug, the first thing they do is they go to Dr. Google. Why? Well, people cite things like it's difficult to get an appointment with a doctor, or will my insurance cover it if they're in the United States? And, you know, they want to have immediate gratification, immediate calming and peace of mind. You know, I don't have cancer, it's just a headache.
But sometimes a headache is cancer.
So we'll come back to that, Nigel. I think one's also got to consider what the source of the material online is. Do they have an agenda to push? So, for instance, if it's people selling pseudoscience-y kind of things like food supplements, We're going to deal with that, I'm sure, multiple times. Or it's a for-profit center offering cosmetic services, you know, regular things that have gone through a regulatory process. But, you know, they're selling something. So the information may be faulty or it may be incomplete.
Yeah, encouraging people that their life would really be better if they'd only had that Botox treatment. And that comes from someone who does Botox.
Yeah, you do.
I do. Yeah. And if pushing a political agenda, just downright wrong. Let's play this out.
So political agendas, that's something that, you know, I get quite heated about. Advocating against things like vaccination, tying a health issue to a political position, mm-hmm. which is, to me, health should be beyond politics. And we saw it, you know, I was living in the United States for many years, as you know, mm-hmm. and I follow back here in Britain now. But during the COVID pandemic, there were crazy things out there, like drinking bleach, for goodness sake. And people followed that advice ended up in serious medical situations, or taking hydroxychloroquine, which is a malaria drug. Yeah. There was no scientific basis for it, but because it was tied to a political agenda, it was pushed.
Yeah, let's be fair. There can be benefits, like finding a good doctor or other healthcare practitioners. And I think if one uses proper websites, joins the docs, for instance, one example would be learning that having a screening colonoscopy is a great way of avoiding developing a fatal colon cancer. I mean, reading about what it's like to have one online would encourage you, I think, actually. It's not a big deal, other than having to poo a lot in preparation. But hey, simple pleasures.
So I used to joke, I did colonoscopy, a lot of them. Mm. And I used to joke with patients that in preparation, if you think that the bottom is dropping out of your world, take the bowel prep and you'll feel the world drop out of your bottom.
Absolutely.
It's interesting that you said having a colonoscopy online. I think what you meant to say, or what you were trying to say, is reading up about having a colonoscopy online and then having the colonoscopy. But it's interesting you said that, because there is a very well-loved American TV personality journalist, Katie Couric, who I've had the pleasure of meeting. Katie's first husband died at, I think he was 42, from an undiagnosed colon cancer. And Katie sought to increase awareness by having a colonoscopy live, right? And, you know, they showed the interior of her colon. They didn't show the certain indiscreet parts of the procedure, shall we say. But, you know,
they didn't record it on VHS, though.
That's a great refer back. That really is. But, you know, those of us who did colonoscopy recognize that what Katie did had an effect. The number of people
coming...
Isn't
that a book, What Katie Did? And what Katie Did Next? I digress.
Do you think you can focus for two
seconds?
Yeah,
okay, go on.
I know it's a stretch.
Go on.
But what Katie did had a massive effect on people coming along to their doctors and saying, I think I might be at risk of colon cancer. May I please have a colonoscopy? She doubtless saved many lives. So there's an example of the internet having a real huge benefit on the health of a nation.
Sure. But assuming someone has a symptom or symptoms and they try and sort it out online, let's talk about how they can go wrong, because people always worry about cancer, for instance.
So they might have cancer. You might be right. Have a headache, been there for a couple of weeks, worse in the morning, or maybe it's worse when you're moving around, when you stand up. One of those is more concerning, right?
It's the first. And Dr. Google doesn't know how to differentiate.
Or you say to yourself, I think it's just a cough. Your partner says to you, it's just a cough. And if you'd gone to the doctor would have said, it's just a cough. But you go to Dr. Google and it's a fatal disease. You're going to die.
Yeah. And, you know, the irony is that that leads to the patient avoiding seeing the doctor because they're afraid to hear the dreadful news, whereas they should probably just have received some simple advice and help.
Yeah. So both sides of the coin, really. Either getting it wrong and you really are sick, in which case time has been wasted that could have been spent getting some treatment, or getting it wrong and spending a lot of time worrying, increasing your stress, right?
Hey, whatever. Proper medical advice is always, most of the time, nothing. Common things are common.
So anyway, I'll give an example. Guy comes to see me at my office, referred with hemorrhoids. I thought it's a pretty standard case. I gave him the usual dietary advice, increase his fiber, apply local creams, try not to strain when having a poop, and so on.
Having a poop. You are a doctor, aren't you?
Yeah, but defecating, why use a technical word? Everyone knows what having a poop means.
Absolutely.
And everyone poops.
Absolutely. And I hope the listeners aren't eating breakfast, unless, of course, it's high fibre.
Well, absolutely. We would hope they are. So I was then explaining different surgical options to him, should that prove necessary, when he told me that he'd looked online and he reckoned that he had anal sarcoidosis.
Sarcoidosis of the anus. Really? Where the hell did you get that? The Klingon Journal of Lesser Known Diseases. I mean, blimey. Sarcoidosis is a condition where inflammatory cells clump together, isn't it? And primarily in the lungs. So I didn't even know it could affect the anus.
You're darn right. I checked online and discovered that there have been two cases reported in the literature.
Was he one of them?
No, he wasn't, because he didn't have sarcoidosis. He had hemorrhoids and I treated him. Everything done. Anyway. Next issue. So a doctor prescribes you a new drug to treat a problem, seems to be helping, but you decide, I'll just check online.
Drug side effects. I know this. Seen it a bunch in my surgery. So every bloody side effect ever described afflicts you. They all get entered into a database because it went through a massive clinical trial, as you know, and 10 million people are using it. It's inevitable somebody would get a rash while using it. It doesn't mean it's a cause and effect. I always say to my patients, there are no side effects if you don't get any.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, predating the internet, my father used to, bless him, he used to read the IFU, the instructions for use, the prescribing information. I think he was the only person on the planet who ever did. And he had every side effect that they described in there. Yeah. It was totally...
Well, I remember the good old days when there were no leaflets inside drugs and no internet and you couldn't look them up.
Exactly.
Halcyon days.
So, you know, looking at stuff that, it sounds patronising and it's not meant to be, but if you don't have all the data to understand what's being presented to you, it's going to induce fear, unnecessary fear. While we're talking about drugs, there's a worrying trend to self-medicate, especially using online pharmacies.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that too. I mean, I've had patients come up to me and their symptoms seem weird until you ask them what they're taking. And you discover they bought something online, for God's sake, and they absolutely should not take them.
So there's a great meme that circulates on the internet. It's a picture of someone long dead who died long before the internet was a thing. Napoleon, Churchill, Einstein. And next to it, it'll say, you know, don't trust something online just because it appears next to a photograph of someone famous.
Where are you going with this?
For instance, Americans inherently like Canadians.
They really?
They see them as trustworthy and honest. Buying drugs online may be dangerous. A bunch of online pharmacies use Canada in their name, even though they've got nothing to do with Canada, because Americans largely see Canada, the brand, as trustworthy, honest. People like and trust Canada.
No.
But these pharmacies have nothing to do with Canada. In fact, there was some research a number of years ago that discovered there was one pharmacy that called itself Canada Health, CanadaPharmacy.com, whatever. And it was actually based in Afghanistan.
Right.
And there was another that was priceless. It was one guy who would sit in a cafe.
I think they put a Taliban on that, didn't they?
It's very good. It's very good. I don't think they did. But yeah, there was another. It was one guy who would sit in a cafe in the morning in the Caribbean. I shan't get very specific. And he would download all the orders and then he would order the drugs from generic companies in India and elsewhere. There's actually zero quality control. So not keen on it.
No, it's madness buying off the interweb, isn't it? I mean, it's bonkers. I mean, a medical term, of course, being bonkers, but it's ridiculous. So don't. Another thought. I mean, people read about things like the dangers of eating grapefruit when they're taking medications and other things. And 5 minutes later, they're down a bloody rabbit warren that says the grapefruit are deadly. True, but only if a case of them falls on you.
So I love understanding how drugs work, Nigel. And there are certain drugs like the statins to treat high cholesterol that are broken down by an enzyme in the body to become the effective molecule, the effective entity. Grapefruit interferes with that process, which leads to too little active drug being available, which means the darn thing doesn't work. And it doesn't work because you've been eating grapefruit. Conversely, there are other drugs that rely on a transport molecule, mm-hmm. something to get them from point A to point B in your body. Grapefruit can interfere with that, and you end up with too much drug in your body.
I think the key word there, John, is some drugs, not all drugs. Grapefruit, good. Internet, bad. So if you're prescribed a given drug, your doctor should and will tell you what foods to avoid. Again, Dr. Google does not have a medical degree.
So, Nigel, what's the first thing the doctor will look for? You'll remember from medical school, we were told the first question that we should be asking, the most important observation that you're going to make when seeing a patient.
Do they actually look ill?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, absolutely. So we look, don't we, for subtle hints, as well as actually listening to what the patient says and then examining them. Good grief. I mean, if that headache is due to a brain tumour, and headache can be a presenting symptom, we'll see all sorts of signs on examination. Urological deficits, papilledema, swelling at the back of the eye when we peer in.
It is interesting, for perspective, everyone gets headaches. Everyone gets headaches. Brain tumours are comparatively rare. And if people have convinced themselves that they might have a brain tumour, as the doctor, when they, you know, eventually turn up, you've now got to deal with that situation and the stress that's been induced.
Yeah. Sometimes the only way to convince them is not a tumor.
Is that supposed to be Schwarzenegger?
No idea. Anyway, it's by doing unnecessary investigations, isn't it? Headache as a first and isolated symptom for a brain tumour only occurs in about 2 to 16% of cases. It's always something else. John, what about people seeking more complex solutions or dealing with acute problems like appendicitis? I mean, something a surgeon like you would address. I mean, many people are seeing other solutions. What about videos?
So there are loads of them. Want to take your own appendix out?
Jesus. No.
Well, let's go back a little bit. In 2005, Jawed Karim, who was 25 at the time, one of the founders of YouTube, posted what was the first YouTube video. It was a 19-second clip called Me at the Zoo, largely talking about how long elephants' trunks were. But there's loads of videos on there about all sorts of issues. And unfortunately, sometimes people look at the wrong videos and decide to take action.
I was just thinking, if you were taking your appendix out, I mean, where would you take it?
Oh, yes, very amusing. So let me give you an example. Doctors, and I've done this, post videos of techniques for training and education, but they have to be taken in context. If I post a video on how to take your gallbladder out, that is not a direct invitation to you to try and take your own gallbladder out.
You need to keep the mirror really still, don't you?
It'd be better to stop moving around.
Absolutely. Stop wriggling under that anaesthetic.
But, you know, there are examples. Learning how to do breast self-exam is one example of a good use of videos on the internet.
Oh, yeah, and there's a great one I've seen, which is a testicular examination by the Deadpool actor, which he calls
Ryan Reynolds, yeah.
That's him, yeah. Rummaging around in your happy sack. Priceless. I mean, you know, we all encourage men to examine themselves. And it's really, really important. And it's a testicular cancer is something that younger men get. I think we forget that. And everybody thinks they're immune when they're younger. But no, that's when it's highest incidence, isn't it?
Yeah. That's when it strikes. There's also a brilliant one. And, you know, we'll put the links to the Ryan Reynolds clip. And there's also a brilliant one where a glamour model, Rian Sugden, I think it was in 2011, she's wearing lingerie and she's sort of writhing around very provocatively until she produces a sort of synthetic scrotum from her panties and shows men how to do a testicular exam. And she says, go on, touch yourself. So it's utterly brilliant. And, you know, it's great use of the internet for health awareness.
Yeah, and that's genius. That is genius. But we have to address, do we not, bad guidance. I mean, a great example is what? Vaccinations?
So can vaccinations kill you or save you? So there's plenty of great advice on the internet on vaccinations presented by credible sources. I'm fully vaccinated. I've had all my COVID shots. I've had all the other shots.
Likewise. And I mean, there's nonsense out there, isn't there, that like vaccinations can cause autism. And that was, as you know, all sparked by the frankly fraudulent work promoted by Wakefield and then picked up by loads of people, but Hollywood celebs, for God's sake.
And then, of course, it goes viral. So for those not in the know, this was a paper that was published, unfortunately, from Great Britain, maintaining that the MRM, the measles, rubella, mumps vaccine, caused autism and inflammatory bowel disease. And the data were fraudulent. And as a direct and proximate result of that, a lot of families did not vaccinate their children. And as a direct and proximate result of that, a lot of kids got sick. And that has now spread to, you know, paranoia about other vaccines. Let's be very, very clear. Having a child with autism must be very hard. I've got two friends who have autistic children, and it's really, really tough on them. But it isn't vaccinations that cause it. No. Clear and simple. That is BS.
You must have a horror story or two to tell.
A real shocker. Do not do this at home. We accept that there are loads of useful videos online, right? We've mentioned some of these, right? There's also plenty of medical videos, as we've also talked about on there, doctors to doctors. Well, there's one or two on how to deal with an ingrowing toenail. That's where the side of your toenail grows into the flesh.
Well, I love operating on those.
I did as well.
Or taking toenails off.
But then again, you've got a medical degree, as do I. Well, this character who I saw in the hospital, he decided to do it himself. So he, first of all, pierced the abscess that had formed to let out the laudable pus, to drain the gooey stuff.
Good stuff.
He then decided to get a pair of scissors and cut up and excise his toenail as he thought best. But he didn't do it in a sterile fashion. He didn't do it properly. He came in with a high fever, lymphangitis, which is, as you know, red lines up the leg, implying infections spreading up the body. He was deathly sick. He had sepsis. He ended up on the intensive care unit, and he damn near died.
As you just say, don't do this at home.
One survey of 2,000 Americans showed that 2 in 5 misdiagnosed their symptoms online, with 3/4 saying they were more worried after the search than before. You know, like, I've got some trouble breathing. It is much more likely to be anxiety than lung cancer.
Well, the other thing is your friend gets diagnosed with a problem and you go, oh no, I've got that too.
It's not just the internet, right? We don't want to send the wrong message here. TV as well. So there's an American TV show. It's actually, in some ways, pretty good. It's called House, and it stars a British actor, Hugh Laurie. And just as an aside, and he has an American accent in this, just as an aside, I am baffled why in American movies and TV, when there's a bad guy, they always, always, always use a British actor. I had the pleasure of knowing the late Alan Rickman. And he was in Die Hard, where he played the villain, who was a German. But they hired a British actor to play the German. It just drove me crazy. But anyway, in House, he is always diagnosing the most obscure causes, right? Always. And that's rarely the case, right? Common things are common.
Absolutely common things are common. I've spent many happy hours shouting at the TV.
You and me both. No!
And trying to get the obscure diagnosis, which is even more ridiculous.
But, the internet does allow for some meaningful research to be done. The American Centers for Disease Control tracks where searches are coming for people looking for flu symptoms so they can work out where to distribute vaccines, which is great. And if you're doing clinical trials or you're recruiting for clinical trials, using the internet, people searching and reaching out, putting adverts, targeted ads. Oh, you've got diabetes. We're doing a clinical trial to evaluate such and such. It's a great use of the internet.
Yeah. And in the Terminator movies, I won't do another Arnie impersonation, if you're pleased
God
to know.
That.
Absolutely. Yeah. You didn't know he was Welsh, did you? Anyway, Skynet, which was the AI-empowered defense system, goes bonkers and decides that the best way to remove all the threats posed to humanity is to kill off humanity. Logical. And so technology is great, and using search engines to find the best flight deal, restaurant, or to buy stuff is great use. If you're looking for medical information, please go to accredited sites associated with recognized medical centers, hospitals, or disease advocacy sites.
Or, heaven forbid, use the internet to find a doctor. I mean, there's a thought or
heaven,
another.
Heaven forfend.
or another healthcare practitioner.
Yeah.
Look, if you've enjoyed Join the Docs, please subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Listen to the archives, like us on social media, leave a review, tell your friends. It does help. You can also go to our website, jointhedocs.com, where there's additional material, and you can see merchandise featuring the work of our brilliant and very goofy resident artist and good friend, Robin Gott.
Yeah, and if you want to reach out to ask us a question or suggest a topic that we discuss, use our social media at Join the Docs. And if you want to reach out to tell us we're rubbish, well, don't.
Until next time, everyone, please stay happy, stay healthy. It beats the alternatives. But remember, we spend a long time dead. Bye for now.
Bye.